Blog Talk Radio.
Time for Sports Card Live. With Sports Card Radio's Brian Tedders, Colin Tedders, MojoBreak.com's Dan Anderson, and your host, Doug Caskey. Dig it.
Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. We're fresh back from the rookie premiere in Pasadena, California. We're going to tell you all about it. We got some sound bites from a player, a couple players actually. And at the end of the show, we're going to talk about a museum collection that just came out, get a little thought review segment on that, Momentum and 2013 Archives. So we'll go ahead and get right into the show, talk about some rookie premiere talk. How you guys doing? How was the flight back? Or how's everybody doing?
Fantastic. Brent, not bad. I mean, you were on the same flight I was coming back on, so how was the flight?
it wasn't bad.
I got to say, it was a trip flying into Bob Hope Airport. It's like a blast from like 1978. Interesting little place there. But yeah, you know, it was all good.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm not a technology guy. Yeah, I know. My forehead's just extremely red right now, and I'm sure yours is too. But I have a bigger forehead than you, so it shows a little bit more.
That's true.
But no, back to Bob Hope Airport. Maybe I'm a technology snob, but when I actually go to get on a flight and things are not, you know, on a screen, and it's just like they put numbers up of this is flight 220, and they actually have to change the numbers like by hand. It's like, whoa, this is a trip. I mean,
yeah,
it was and when you actually have to get off the plane on some stairs as opposed to, one of those tunnels. I mean, I don't take a lot of flights. There's probably terms for those. There's probably a name for that little, you know, passageway that gets you back into the airport. But not at Bob Hope. You just you walk right onto the tarmac and you get into the airport there.
Was it definitely a propeller flight? Was it a propeller too? Did you have to help like pull the propeller down to get it started?
We all had to run, and then once it started to take off, we jumped on. So,
yeah.
But we did see David Arquette at the airport, which was kind of interesting. From Courtney Cox fame, and he looked like he had a rough night. This was 9 o'clock in the morning, and he had some sunglasses on and. It wasn't quite walking very fast, so I could just assume he had, you know, one of those nights to remember the night before, and he had to walk in and stroll into Bob Hope Airport to catch a flight out to work, who knows ever. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it looked like he had a pretty good time. He was just, he was worked a little bit, but that was cool. You know you're in L.A. when you get off like a plane and you see a movie star. I mean, David Arquette is not super famous. I mean, I guess Scream would be the thing that he's most famous for, but
definitely,
yeah, that was cool. It was a fun little way to start the day. But yeah, it was the Pasadena was cool. It was weird being in a stadium, like a stadium that holds like probably 70,000 people, and not one person in the stands. That was kind of weird to look around and go, whoa, there's like nobody here.
There was, and you know, it was. I didn't know what to expect I expected a lot more people there. And I mean, it was really was an exclusive event. There was maybe 100 people total on the field. I mean, you had obviously Topps and Panini there, NFLPA. And then the rest of the people walking around were just media people. So it was quite an event. Ryan, why don't you start off and maybe just kind of kickstart how the event started off and share some of your experiences.
I thought it was a fun time. There was also the largest BMW car show going on in the Rose Bowl parking lot. I mean, there were thousands upon thousands of BMWs, so I almost wanted to go to the car show as well. But inside the Rose Bowl, like you said, it was about 100 150, I don't know how many people, including the players, just walking station to station. It's primarily an event for the Topps and Panini, so they each had about two or three stations each. A couple, Panini had at least two for autographs, where about four players would come in for about an hour at a time and sign stickers, sign on-card stuff, sign 8x10, sign hats, sign shoes, sign footballs. They had all kinds of stuff there. And then they had photo opportunities. Each company had a little different setup for each company. Panini, it looked like maybe we're going for more action shots on the field, it seemed like. And then Topps had a nice little setup where they were getting the players maybe to be a little more animated and a, maybe a little more personal shot. All the players just basically rotate from station to station throughout the course of the day. And so, and there wasn't quite 40 players there. Manti Te'o and Tyler Eifert, the Notre Dame guys, were graduating, so they weren't there. And I don't ever remember seeing Eddie Lacy there. Did you guys ever see Eddie Lacy?
Yeah, Packers, right?
I saw him in the morning. I got a photo of him in the morning, but then you're right. I didn't really see him after that. So maybe he had to cut out too.
You know what that has me thinking, and I didn't actually see E.J. Manuel signing a lot of autographs either. It could be that Eddie Lacy wanted a higher price for his autograph, and maybe he didn't sign as much as some of these other guys. It seemed like some guys were just signing. That's just, I don't know, not something that I know that's factual, but I just thought that it was odd that he wasn't really around. And since a large portion of that shoot was sitting down and signing a bunch of stuff, the fact that he wasn't around, maybe he'd done it earlier, but maybe he's going to be a little more limited. We see that every year. You know, Robert Griffin last year, Andrew Luck, limited. Russell Wilson toward the end of the year, limited. SP or whatever you want to call it. So that'll be interesting to see what happens kind of going forward. But the event I thought was really interesting. You know, the players are out there working. The card companies have about 30 people there each working, boom, 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 getting them to sign all these cards and getting them to take pictures. And it's not really it's a frantic event, I think, for the card companies. For the players, it's more of a chill event. They're around these guys that are the same age. They've gotten probably to know some of each other. They're some of them are teammates. So the players are just kind of out hanging out, getting a massage, checking their phone, kissing their girlfriend, all kinds of stuff. So it's just really good time. I had a great time.
A couple of guys that I saw that signed a lot of autographs, just real quick. Stedman Bailey from the Rams signed a lot of autographs, a lot of stickers.
Yep.
He at one point he was actually joking with Panini that he was like, man, I'm signing too much. This is ridiculous. and I think a kid from the Chiefs, is it Niall Davis?
Niall Davis.
Yep.
Okay, get ready for that guy's auto. It's just a K and a D, and there's gonna be a lot of them. Like he signed like straight up going 100 miles an hour. Signed about 100,000 stickers. That's a crazy number, but I mean, he was there forever signing. Felt bad for the guy because he was there. I mean, for the first like 45 minutes to an hour that we were on the floor, he was in the same spot signing. So you're going to see a lot of his autos.
Yeah, he's definitely not he might be the new Agnew. At least he's a running back, and you know, with Jamal Charles over there on the Chiefs, you know. Might have an opportunity. I know they drafted Cyrus Gray the year before, so he's probably going to be third or fourth on the depth chart to start off. But, yeah, you're going to see Niles Davis, you know, and probably he's going to be in every box, or at least 2K. Niles Davis.
He's good.
You know.
He by how much he signed, it could be every pack. I'm not sure. Could be, yeah, he's, could he's, be every he's all every pack retail and hobby. Like, just every pack you get a Niall Davis auto.
You know,
yeah,
what was interesting?
There's a lot of them.
What was interesting was that massage booth. I actually was tempted at some point because it was so hot and, you know, I was getting burned out there with my redneck skin. I was thinking about seeing how much it would cost for these people to go ahead and give me a massage. I wonder if it was player only, but they were chillaxing under these umbrellas, and they had these guys and gals massaging them. And I don't know if they do that every year as kind of a bribe or, hey, you know, you've been signing for an hour, let's go ahead and give you a free massage. But that was kind of an interesting portion to the event, was the massage area.
They were marketing some kind of product.
They were.
Of some
they
sort.
Were.
Yeah.
They've had that in years past, too. They've had the little massage table set up. Maybe a different company. I don't know. But they've had the little massage. And I think it's kind of cool. Players are out there. They're huge guys, some of them. And it was a little warm, but it wasn't that. It wasn't that bad. And in the shade, it wasn't that bad. And yeah, I thought it was kind of, hey, did you guys use the free thing they gave you, the little ice pack thing? Is recoup on any injury?
Oh, yeah, they And I seen them actually taking some photos of some player kind of like with those on the field when we walked by, because I remember when we first got there, they were taking photos of the little heat, hot and cold pack. They were, maybe that was part of the deal, was that they were going to get marketing off of them for being there too, as well.
Right. A couple things I want to point out before I forget or to mention them. The fact that they're, you know, they spend so much money on this event, it's got to be at least few hundred thousand for both Panini, and I actually seen Panini, Topps put up 18 people for 5 days in a hotel, employees.
Wow.
5 days for 18 employees. So that's just the start of the expenses for Topps. That doesn't even get into paying the players. I'm thinking we're talking about a 200, maybe even like a $250,000 event. I mean, for each company, it's so expensive. I think that's why we see some of these football products get released so late in the year. So this Andrew Luck stuff, you know, all these products that we discussed on the show that we're like, man, I wish this would have came out in September or October or November during the football season. I think one of the reasons why they do that is they need to kind of backload some of this money because they've got to, boom, put a huge front load into this rookie premiere. But it's a huge expense for both companies. Secondly, and actually something happened yesterday that might change this fact. Secondly, they are only getting a few sets signed at the event on cards.
Yeah.
Like, bigger than you. Inception, some of the cards that are going to go in Topps, Top Series 1, the Space Topps football, Bowman. Other than that, it's a lot of stickers. Now, what happened yesterday, the NFLPA and the NFL agreed that they're going to push the NFL draft into May, whereas right now it's at the end of April. So now they're going to push the draft into May, which will delay the rookie premiere. And I'm actually going to, once they finalize the date of the draft, I'm going to try to figure out when are they going to do the rookie premiere, because I think it's a good thing that they, if they can move it back a little bit, because they might be able to plan ahead for some more sets and get some more cards printed. Do some more on-card autographs. If they can push the premiere back into June after these guys go through their little week-long media after they get drafted and they've got usually some OTA responsibilities and kind of getting their life in order, then bring them out to the Rose Bowl maybe in the middle of June just before training camp or a couple, give them a few weeks before training camp. Get them out there. Get a bunch of cards printed. Get it signed on card. I was just stunned at how huge and expensive for both companies, but that they're really only getting, aside from the sticker gun product, they're only getting three, four, maybe five sets on card at this event, and when they're going to come out with, what, 18 to 25 each probably in the football category. So that's just one thing, and some of the employees they had there were actually outsourced through a staffing company, and that's why maybe I thought they could have done a little better job handling the cards. constructive criticism. I'm not blasting them or anything. It's just trying to be constructive, kind of looking at it from a collector angle. I thought they could have done a little better job handling the cards after the players had signed them. But these are all people that are coming from a staffing company. They're not really aware of the collectible value of the one-of-one autograph that Matt Barkley just signed or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a really nice inscription card. You guys got some great pictures of some inscription cards that'll be in Inception, which looks really nice. Inception looks really nice. Some of the top autographs they're signing look really nice. Those are just some few points. The fact that the NFL draft is moving into May, it will impact the rookie premiere, and I think it's going to be a positive thing because hopefully the card companies get a little more time to plan and now create better football products.
Yeah, you know what was also what people are going to notice, because, I mean, I looked at a lot of the Inception cards these guys are signing. They were in double zero. So I remember people last year complaining about, oh, double zero, double zero. Well, they had to have these cards made before the draft and before they picked the numbers and stuff like that. So, I mean, I know with Barkley, the guy from the Steelers quarterback, the guy from the Raiders, they're going to be in double zero. And I know people are going to complain about it, but I think these guys are under so much of a time crunch to get these on-card autos that they, you know, they got to start printing them after the draft, like probably the next day, to get these cards printed, and they're not going to know what number these guys are going to wear. So they can't – so as much complaining on the forums about these guys wearing double zero, I really don't know if there's a solution for that.
Right. Aside from just way too much work editing in the number, or just more time from when they get picked and when they get the number, there's the time delay here with that, and then when the photo shoot is and when they're designing the cards. So I just hope that maybe, even if they just gave these card companies just a few more weeks with that information, I don't know. I'm double thinking myself. I'm thinking maybe it would be better if the draft was earlier. If you get that away, give them 2 or 3 months to plan and then have the photo shoot in June or something. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. It was interesting that they announced this yesterday because it is going to impact kind of card scheduling a little bit, possibly a month, several weeks. It's going to move all the release dates. This type of thing should probably move all the release dates because it's going to impact when this premiere is. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I'll definitely reach out to at least Panini and see what their thought process is once we know the draft date and maybe a tentative Johnny Manziel, 2014 rookie premiere schedule.
What cards did you guys see people signing, like, on card? I know I saw Inception, and there was the Bowman, and there was Tops, the base set, like the Topps football. Panini had, I thought I saw Prestige.
Yeah, Prestige, yeah. And I did see those acetates from Elite. They were doing those too.
Okay, yeah, I didn't see the acetates, but it looked like, I counted at least 3 Topps releases that they were getting on-card autos, and maybe two Panini, and they were doing the one-on-one sketch cards at the Panini booth as well.
Yeah, with those those in prior years have been like national stuff. So you'll see those given away at the national, at the Panini booth. At least that's what they've done in prior years. I don't know if they're going to actually throw those into sets this year or not. They usually get those things slabbed because they're essentially just having them sign on a white dummy card. So it's probably going to be something that they give away.
Yeah, Tavon Austin do 3 of them just on his own. In one city. So I think technically they're all one of one, quote unquote, but, and I'm sure they'll be whatever distributed, however they are separately, but it looked like players were doing multiple. I mean, I have a picture of Tate Austin with all 3 of the ones he had done, on his own, but there was only, I mean, like Dan said, Inception, Bowman, Tufts, base top, and that was it, and a bunch of stickers. So there, you know, there's more signatures to get, and maybe you can't have a guy sign like 20,000 things in a weekend. Obviously, you can't have all the cards printed in that period of time, but God, you have all those guys there. I just wish there was even more stuff that they could sign on card while they were there.
A lot of the guys were signing memorabilia too. They were signing like hats, and they were signing like mini helmets, and I saw Stephon Taylor sign a jersey of his, like for the Letterman matches, which would be pretty cool. But yeah, they had him signing memorabilia as well. It wasn't just cards.
Yep.
Yeah, it's you know what's interesting about the whole thing too is before I had been to this rookie premiere, everybody asked me, why is Michael Ekdu in five-star? Why is the year before? Why is Bill O'Powell in five-star? And I just assumed, well, they're rookie premier guys. They had them signed then. Well, we know being there this weekend, they didn't. So they must not wait very long for that stuff. Maybe they have them sign them before the season. Maybe they send it to them. I mean, because one would think that.
Yeah, see, there's an agreement there that you will then sign X amount for the rest of the season. Because they can't – that's why Ekdu just doesn't – or a player maybe who gets hurt or something like that, they just doesn't get X off the list. It might even be like a contract that, okay, yes, I will sign X amount for the rest of the season at such and such amount per card or whatever it is. And Andrew Luck's going to get, you know, $40, $50 a card, and – you know, now Davis is going to get maybe less than $1 or $1.25
right.
or something like that per card.
Well, and maybe that's what it is it's a budgetary thing because, I mean, obviously Topps, before Five Star comes out, knows that, you know, no one's collecting Ekdu, and, you know, maybe they could throw in like a John Taylor instead of an Ekdu at this point, but maybe they've already budgeted the money for that set where they actually have already paid Michael Ekdu to sign for Five Star. And they have to basically recop or whatever, fill that set. So it's not like even though they know he's not collectible at this point, they can't throw him out because he's a rookie premier guy. So there must be some kind of agreement with these guys that they're going to be in all these sets throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
And we did learn that these guys are paid by the card company. This is not payment that they get through the NFLPA. NFLPA kind of helps them put it together. But these are absolutely checks that are being signed by the card companies.
Yep.
Yeah.
I wonder if we're ever going to get a year where there's this hot shot guy that comes out that says, you know what, maybe like a Barry Bonds of football, that comes out and goes, you know what, I'm not signing. I'm a rookie and I'm not going to sign. I wonder if that's ever going to happen. Like I heard rumblings in 2010 that Newton may have not even have been at the rookie premiere. Like he was like a last minute. I remember in 2010, like he was saying on Thursday when the event was on Friday that he may not be there for whatever reason. I don't know what the reasoning was. It could have been contract, could have had something going on personally. But if he wasn't there, you know, that obviously would have put a big damper on some of the early on-card Cam Newton stuff that everybody was chasing.
Well, I mean, it also, I feel what you're saying. I mean, these guys haven't signed their NFL contracts yet. So this is literally their first opportunity to make money is to sign a contract with the car companies. So, you know, I mean, it's still probably the biggest check that they've seen so far since they've been playing professional sports. Unless they went to like USC or something and they got paid.
Right, exactly. Depending on college they went to and their paycheck in college.
Exactly. that's why I was like, I'm like, unless they went to USC, because then they got paid.
Yeah.
Matt Barkley's doing fine. That's why Matt Barkley stayed, because it was actually financially beneficial for him to stay at USC because he, you know, and look what he ended up with. I mean, we all saw his little fiance there, I think we overheard that or. The kid's doing just fine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. He'll be fine as the maybe third on the depth chart with the Eagles because I'm sure he's gotten money. I don't want to judge a book by its cover, but that guy looks like he already had money. Wherever he came from, he looks like he already had money. He didn't look like he struggled at any point. But, like I said, I can't judge a book by its cover. But, yeah, he had a nice little arm candy there. So, you know.
He was signing He was signing a lot of autographs. I saw him in there signing a lot of Inception, a lot of other stuff. So I don't think he's going to be one of these guys who's going to be a fourth-round short print quarterback, you know, because he had a big name in college. I think there'll be a fair amount, hopefully, Matt Barkley stuff, at least initially, in the football product. So that's a good thing because he does have a following from USC, and you never know. If he does well in Philadelphia, his cards will be worth quite a bit. So the fact that he was signing a lot, I'm crossing my fingers. I don't have anything against him. I don't watch college football, so I hope he does well. And because I think it would definitely help the rookie market, the 2013 rookie market.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a good guy to collect. I mean, Go ahead, Doug.
No, I was just going to kind of flip to talking about lead products. So you got to think, without having to pay the NFLPA license, you wonder if the products that Mr. Brian Gray gets, like Leaf Valiant and Leaf Metal, that are actually already on the market. I opened a box of Leaf Valiant yesterday for a customer, and I mean, I pulled, and just you get five autographs a box, and you're looking at a retail about 85. I pulled a Ryan Nassib, and I also got a Matt Barkley, and all these guys that are in this set are the same that they're going to sign for Topps and Panini. So you wonder if his just cost of acquisition is that much cheaper because he doesn't have to pay for the NFLPA license. And I wonder how much it costs him to get a Matt Barkley to sign as opposed to a Topps to get Matt Barkley to sign.
And, you know, he hits them right in the beginning. Boom, he gets them right, you know, after the draft. Right, not even – he gets them waiting for the draft. I mean, he gets them when they announce that they're going pro. And so, boom, he's on it. And so is Press Pass and Say. So I think that's when they – or depending on what college they went to, these guys don't have a lot of money. So they need – and it's money for agents, too, because they get 3%. You know, there's a 3% max that they can take on the player contract. But on marketing deals, an agent told me that they can get 30 to 40% of that. So if the guy's signing $1 a card, he's really only getting 60 cents a card because his agent's getting 40 cents of that. So it's a big windfall for the agents to have these guys into the set. It helps pay for all the expenses leading up to the draft and sending him out to Arizona for to go to those little athlete camps, those pro athlete camps that they have, training centers and stuff, and then the combine and then the draft and the $3,000 suits and everything that you need and the entourage and the family. So it's a big, big expenditure sometimes for the agent and the player in the draft process. So Sage, Press Pass, Leaf, they kind of bridge the gap there from Topps and Panini. And I think you're right. I think they probably do get autographs a little bit cheaper. Maybe in the short run, Panini and Topps, they have like a bulk deal where they're getting God knows how many autographs. Michael Egnew signed. Michael Egnew might have signed 25,000 autographs combined between the two companies. So
I wouldn't doubt it.
You know, at 50 cents an autograph, so he made whatever, you know, $15,000. So, I think those sets are interesting, and those I've seen those cards are selling decently right now, which bodes well for the stuff Panini and Topps are going to come out with here shortly.
Well, and I think these guys almost have to have it come out first because at once Prestige or Score or some of these Elite or Bowman come out, I mean, no one's going to want this Press Pass, Valiant stuff. So these guys almost got to, hit early, like real early. Like even before the draft, I think Press Pass was coming out. So it's that's their market. That's their time of year to make money on these 2013 rookies.
Yeah.
But, it was kind of interesting. We actually talked with Stephon Taylor, and I ripped some audio from him about how many jerseys they wear. And I'll go ahead and play that right now. The audio's not the greatest because I was getting it on my iPhone while I was out there. So you hear the music in the background. It's me and Dan talking to Stephon Taylor real quick. And actually, Zach Ertz. So you have the Stanford connection there. Mostly Stephon Taylor And if you're not familiar with Stephon Taylor, he's on the Arizona Cardinals. He was a fourth-round draft pick, and he broke a lot of records at Stanford, broke a lot of Toby Gerhardt's records. So we just talked to him briefly while he was kind of relaxing from all the photos and the autographs that he was doing here. So I'm going to play this real quick.
What's up, guys? From the Bay Area, so we're big Stanford guys.
You are?
So yeah.
What's up?
Yeah, definitely.
Where in the Bay?
San Jose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alamo, Danville.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So how long have you guys been out here?
I've been out since Wednesday.
Okay. They had you guys
I don't
do
know
the.
You're talking about today or not?
Oh.
Today I've been out here since 6 or 8.
Nice. How's the experience so far besides getting maybe a little carpal tunnel from signing too many?
That's fun.
That's cool. The guys cool, so that's good.
And their personalities.
Yeah. Got the chips and the apples and everything all set. Yeah. How many jerseys have you guys put on, if you don't mind me asking?
Just for these ones? Or
yeah,
the
like
cards?
When you for the cards and stuff.
Like 25 cards?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Nice. Yeah, we have a.
Cut them up in a bunch of little pieces.
Yeah, they cut them up in tiny little pieces with colors and stuff. And we open all the products, so we have a group breaking company.
Yeah.
So we see it all, so
yeah.
We're always curious to see how many they have you guys. There's a photo, I think, like 2 years ago with Ingram, and he had them all on at the same time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so he had like 100 of them on. So I'm wondering if that's how it goes down, because out of curiosity. Nice.
That way it'd be harder, another way.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, I'm sure with all the sumo out there.
Yeah, so that was I noticed the audio was a little bit bad, but I mean, we got the fact that he said they only wore 25 jerseys, which is, to me, it seems like that's not enough. So, I mean, I don't know if he meant 25 per card company, and I didn't want to ask too much of the logistics of that event, but yeah, so Stephon Taylor said 25, and you know, I see so many cards with multicolored prime swatches on there that it seems to me like it's closer to like 50 to 100, but you know, he may have lost count after, you know, number 10. Who knows?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I could see, you know, how big those jerseys are. 30 is old. That's
a lot.
I could see that being reasonable, somewhere in that 25 to 50 number. I think anything over 50 would be just like that's an obscene amount of jerseys. I could see 25 or 30. I like that.
Yeah, that you know, he, like I said, he may not have, and he, you probably didn't hear the audio because it was a little low because of where the phone was, but he said that he was actually taking one on and then putting another one on, taking one off, putting another one on. So he didn't do the Mark Ingram technique where really the third jersey wasn't really touching any of his body. So, I mean, it's still event worn at that point, so it, you know, people will go crazy over these relics when the guy put it on for, you know, 10 seconds. But I mean, it was worn. I guess you could say that much about it.
Think about 25 jerseys, though. I mean, there's only 16 regular season games in a season, so it's literally like almost, you know, if they did 30 jerseys, it's almost like two seasons of jerseys if they wore one. If you got a jersey from them from every game, so I could see that 20. I could see 20 to 25 to 30 jerseys being enough to. And those pieces are so small, even the patches and stuff, and those jerseys are so large. Robert Woods was telling me that the jerseys were really big that they had them try on. So, and the Mark Ingram picture when they were like. You know, they cover his whole body. It's like a dress and stuff. It's like a snuggie that they put on, basically. I could see 25 being enough. And plus, the companies have to pay for these jerseys. They pay $50 for the footballs. The football full retail, I believe, is $100. Like if you go into a Big Five Sporting Goods or something, an authentic NFL football, I want to say it's at least $100. It might be $120. So they were getting those for $50 each. I'm assuming they're getting the authentic jerseys probably at wholesale cost or cost, which was, I don't know what that would be, maybe $100, maybe. I had no idea what that would be. But they've got to buy 25 jerseys at $100 a pop for each player. So this event,
right.
is, I just keep running the numbers through my head, is how expensive this event is for top 10 teams. It's just mind-boggling, like, how expensive it is, how much money they spend. And I hope in the future with some of the scheduling changes to the NFL, maybe they're able to plan ahead more and even get more out of this event than what they're already able to do.
Yeah, and there's also something to be said about these guys getting restless. I mean, we've seen them out there trying to, you know, a few of the guys were complaining that they, you know, how much they had to sign and stuff like that. So maybe even if they, maybe they do have some of the sets ready, but they're like, you know, we can't really have them sign more than 500, 600, 700 autographs in a day or something. Maybe they're like, well, we're going to send you more, or, you know, stuff like that. So that's a possibility. And then I wonder when they do start sending them the other stuff that's on card. When you see these redemption from these sets, like I know later in the season, like Crown Royale for Panini and Limited and stuff like that, they had a lot of redemptions and people blamed Panini, but it falls back on the athlete. But what I do want to find out is when they start sending Limited to get signed, like are they sending it now? I mean, are they sending it at the beginning of the season? I mean, that would be another interesting fact to find out is when do these cards actually get shipped to these guys to sign on card?
Yeah. That would be interesting, and I think all this should be very transparent. And the reason
yeah.
why is because these things are autographs. These are supposedly event-worn, player-worn stuff, X, Y, and Z. The fact that the event should be closed off. It shouldn't be, you know, there shouldn't be 50,000 people in the stands or fans wandering around trying to get autographs. It should be a closed-off event, but the process of making these cards should be totally transparent if you want all these collectors out here to spend all this money thinking that this is an authentic autograph of Andrew Luck and that he didn't just hand it to his girlfriend because he didn't want to sign 1,000 things. And we've seen
right.
that signatures change. It wouldn't surprise me one bit. And I know they don't do live signing sessions anymore for the most part, I want to say. It's a lot of mail order stuff. So these guys could get this thing in the mail and be like, hey, girl, could you sign this for me? I don't feel like doing it or whatever. And somebody
yeah.
said, I guarantee that happens. Guarantee you that happens. I mean, I would put any amount of money that happens. That not all these autographs are signed by the players. So the fact that when you have them at this premiere, you need to get as much done as possible. You need to make that as transparent as possible so that you can ensure the collectors that these things are authentic. Not that anything that comes out of Topps or Panini product, you know, you're not going to have a whole lot of problems with it. If you send it into a third-party authenticator and it comes back not authentic, chances are you're going to get taken care of.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. It take a while with Topps, but I'm sure they will take care of you. So even with the set, I think Topps Prime last year, with all the player-worn mistakes, they'd show, you know, it was a picture of so-and-so, but it was a jersey of another team. Clearly, it was a jersey
right.
of another team. That happened on multiple occasions, on multiple cards. It wasn't just a couple cards. It was quite a few cards. So
yeah.
and that's a mistake. You know, that is a mistake. And I wish it was all a little more transparent. I had even one guy from Panini was like, he asked me who I worked for, and I hesitated for a minute because I almost told him the truth, which would have been nobody. But I think that would have been way too sarcastic, so I didn't tell him that. But he was like, oh, did you talk to Tracy? And oh, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Talk to Tracy? Like you guys should want all this stuff to be out there because it's, you know, and you have to be transparent. You're selling autographs. You're selling memorabilia, collectible stuff. You got to know that it's real, that it's legit, that Geno Smith is actually signing all this stuff. So I don't know. I wish they would be a little more conscious of that fact, that not everybody
yeah.
knows who Panini is. Believe it or not, not everybody knows who Panini is or who Topps is. And when they see an autograph of that, they want to know that it's real and that they can find information about it and about the product and stuff. So.
Well, there was the story back in the day that how Dez Bryant's auto changed. Like when he came out, it was, and then it was completely different on a couple sets later. So people were saying, oh, yeah, Dez Bryant likes to hang out with a bunch of boys, and he probably just said, hey, sign it for me. You know, hey, man, I'm playing, you know, I'm playing PS3, or, you know, I'm going out tonight. Here, can you sign these? I'll give you, you know, I'll give you $500. You sign, you know, 100 stickers for me or whatnot. So, you know, there's those stories that float around. These guys don't have time. They just give it to whoever.
Would it surprise you if Dez Bryant did that?
No.
There you go.
I mean, you know, knowing his, yeah, exactly. Knowing, I mean, and I don't want to rip on somebody's character, but we all knew about his off-season troubles and stuff like that. So when somebody says that that happened, you're like, oh, okay. So, you know.
I think that happens. I think it's not just Dez Bryant. I have a feeling that happens a lot. I mean, who's there to police it? I mean, I guess if you have an example of the guy's autograph before you send out the stickers and the cards and stuff like that for future releases, you can compare it. But, I mean, what if he comes back and goes, oh, well, I've been working on it. This is how I'm going to do my autograph now. It's kind of the card company's word against the player's word. And I mean, the player is going to be like, if you don't like it, then whatever. I mean, you guys still owe me my money.
Well, and that's a good point about how a guy's autograph changes. If you look at Bryce Harper when he was signing for Upper Deck in 2009, he actually wrote out Bryce Harper. Now he just does the big B, the big H with some squiggles.
Yeah.
So, you know, these guys do adapt and they change their auto, and it might be something that, you know, they sign so much, they're like, why do I write out my full name? I'm just going to, you know, make like an insignia of my name. And everybody claims that these old-timers have such great autos. It might be a product of these guys not signing that much. I mean, now they're signing a lot for these cards, but back in, you know, 68, was Johnny Bench signing a bunch of cards? No. So now Johnny Bench is, you know, being asked to do autograph shows. He still signs his name, like, you know, full out. But when you're Bryce Harper and you have to sign a million autographs a year, you're going to probably figure out ways to shorten your autograph. Look at Niles Davis.
Yeah.
He's like, man, I'm going to be out here forever if I actually write out Niles Davis. I got to have to figure out a way to shorten my name up.
I think it has a little to do with pride, though. I mean, the older generations definitely – take pride in their signature, and they view it as a piece of memorabilia, and they have an understanding of what it is. Plus, I mean, it's their name. They want it to look nice. They know it's going to be displayed somewhere. The younger generation, they just don't care. I mean, they're just like, I gotta get this done as fast as possible. It's like a kid sitting down and trying to do his homework as fast as possible so he can go out and play. I mean, it's kind of the same concept.
Definitely. Well, here's a question for both of you guys, going back to just the athletes themselves. And, you know, obviously we didn't see them play. I mean, there's college videos out there. I mean, college is not the pros. There's some talent that was out there at the rookie premiere. Just judging by their demeanor and what you guys seen on the field, give me a guy that you want to collect, and give me a guy that you think is going to be a bust. Start with Dan.
The guy I'm going to collect, and it's mostly because it's a personal deal, is Stephon Taylor, because he's Stanford and I've watched him play for 4 years. So I'm going to collect him. I'm going to collect Zach Ertz. But the guy I think that's going to be a stud, just based on how he went about his business and just, like, his physical size, is going to be EJ Manuel. I think that guy is going to be a beast. He is huge, and he's not like Jamarcus Russell big. I mean, he's like built and tall, and like he looks super athletic. So I think that guy is going to be. I think the Bills were onto something there, drafting him as the first quarterback.
Maybe they were.
The guy I think that's going to be a bust, based on his demeanor, is going to be Cordell Patterson.
Cordarrelle
Patterson. Seems like he has a little growing up to do, but we'll see. I mean, he was out there having fun and trying to loosen it up a little bit. But you can see a handful of the guys taking it serious. Like, you know, I'm here, I'm getting paid to do this, I'm going to do what the card companies want me to do, I'm just going to go through the routines and, you know, socialize and have a good time at it. But, yeah, see, I foresee him being a bust for sure.
Well, and before we get to Ryan, I'll actually, that leads and kind of segues into the audio. This was Cordarrelle Patterson from the Vikings. He was a late first rounder for the Vikings receiver. He's wearing number 84, which is Randy Moss's number. But we actually, he actually stepped into the DJ booth a couple separate times, got on the mic, and was, I don't know what he was trying to do, honestly, but here's some of the audio, and you'll hear me laughing in the background. It was quite highly entertaining, but this is him stepping up on the mic.
I'll flash you, you wouldn't even know it. Okay, hey, my boy in the field at the 50-yard line right there now. Y'all ain't even know it, though, but he played with San Fran. Okay, get it. Hey, look. Okay. He played the guitar, huh? So he was playing the guitar. That's the old man, so, yeah. Hey, you. Hey, bro. Don't put no hands on that.
Yeah, so that was him having fun on the mic for sure. You know, and you know he's probably from Southern, you know, Alabama-ish. I mean, I don't know where exactly he's from, but you know he's got that accent. But he definitely likes that fun. But he, you know, he was giving me the eye when I was taking a few pictures too. So he's like, I was coming in. I think I even see him look at you, Ryan, when you were coming in taking pictures of him signing. He was kind of like, "What are you doing?" Kind of like, you know, don't take pictures of me. At least it seemed like that. I could be wrong. You know, once again, judging a book by its cover. He's from South Carolina, so he played for Tennessee. So that's kind of where the accent comes from. Big boy. I mean, he's got all lined up for him. But, you know, the problem with him is what we talked about off air is also the quarterback. You got Ponder. You know, they tried the Joe Webb experience last year, the year before. So there's not a – besides AP, I mean, that's what that offense revolves around is give the ball to AP. So we'll see. See what he does. But I do agree with you on the bust. Ryan, if you want to, for what you saw player-wise, who you like and who you think is going to be a bust.
I think, I had a unique experience at the GTS, the distribution thing, where I got to see four players. I was in the front, and they were all answering questions. And even kind of observed them before the question and answer when they were just kind of talking about stuff. One of the rookie running backs, I believe he was the first running back taken, Giovanni Bernard, in the second round. Very well spoken, seemed intelligent, young guy. So he's one guy that I'm interested in. And pretty much all four of the guys that were there, Rashawn Woods, the California guy, USC guy, really kind of chill, well spoken guy. You can tell he was intelligent. He's another guy who I might pick up a few cards. Manti Te'o, who unfortunately wasn't there on Saturday because he was graduating from Notre Dame. But just a really, obviously what had happened to him, the whole girlfriend incident and stuff, I just find him to be very interesting. I find that situation to be interesting, what's going to happen to him to be interesting. He plays for the Chargers. I grew up around the corner from the San Diego Chargers owner, the people who own the Chargers. So there you go. I kind of root for Manti. Giovanni Bernard, Rashawn Woods. I'm trying to think of another guy. Vance McDonald. Oh, the two players who tweeted me, definitely. Vance McDonald and of the 49ers, the tight end, and Matt Barkley. He liked the picture of his girlfriend. So I couldn't figure out why my phone was like blowing up. Like all of a sudden, we're sitting there eating lunch, and my phone's just like, ah! Like, got all these, like, things going on. I guess somehow he's seen the picture of the girlfriend that I put on Twitter, the girlfriend, so he retweeted that, and man, my phone just, like, blew up. We're loving
nice.
That girlfriend picture. So, yeah, so those two guys. Because somehow they found whatever I was putting on Twitter, they found it somehow, and then they – it's too complicated to, like, at-tweet players and stuff. I'm always amazed at how people can, like, at-tweet players, hashtag, like, four things in a tweet and stuff. I'm like – if I try to, like, at-tweet somebody, like, I mess up the tweet or my thumbs get sore or it's just like this, I'm just going to text. You know, it's like texting is real easy. But if you're, like, have to at-tweet so-and-so or you got to know their Twitter account or know the hashtag or know how to spell it or oh my God. So the fact that those guys found that I put something on Twitter about them and hit me up, I appreciate that. So I'll buy their, I'll definitely be a buyer of their cards.
Well, you know, it's, you know, to get off, before I go into mine, I do have to give you credit on just, you know, mastering, fitting the 140 characters. Cause I find myself like you, when you tweet, you'll put just enough words to get the point across. And I find myself like, you know, tweeting it up, you know, I'm not even halfway into my, what I want to say. And I'm like, I don't have any words left. So I have to like, it's definitely an art form that you have mastered. To use the right amount of just words that actually make sense and you're not misspelling anything, because I see guys just like shorten words so they can fit it in there and stuff like that. But yeah, you and there's a few other people I follow on Twitter that like Tim Kawakami uses, he's a Bay Area guy who follows the Warriors and, you know, tweets about Bay Area sports. He uses the right amount of tweets like yourself. You write amount of characters that, you know, get the point across. So I definitely need to go to Twitter school to get my point across when I tweet. So props on that.
I appreciate that. That's very nice you just say that. I appreciate that.
But to my pick, you know, I like Stephon Taylor just because, you know, very approachable guy, not doesn't have a big head. Didn't seem like he walked around there like his S didn't stink. But the guy I really was impressed with, and, you know, I didn't even hear much about him until he was there, was Denard Robinson from Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Former Michigan guy who was actually a quarterback in Michigan, broke a lot of rushing records. They ran a lot of Wildcat with him in Michigan. But he actually, there was two guys that were there that were both huge Denard Robinson fans. They wore the Michigan jersey. And, you know, they said, oh, can we take a picture with you? And, you know, they took a picture on their phones, and then he actually said, this is so cool that you guys are wearing my jersey. Can you take a picture on my phone so I can send it out? And I was like, whoa. You know, I mean, most athletes that you see are just kind of too busy for that. So he did that, and then he, like, was just really appreciative of them. He was just like, thank you, guys. That was awesome. You know, well-spoken guy, just very appreciative, very smile on his face the whole event that I seen him or walking around. He was just happy, joking around. One interesting fact about him is that he doesn't tie his shoes when he plays.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he'll be doing that. Yeah, they call him Shoelace. He's got the nickname Shoelace because his shoelaces are just flopping everywhere where he's running. So I don't know if that's like a technique where it throws players off and maybe they try to grab the shoelace or something while he's running. But he doesn't tie his shoes. And I just think with Jacksonville, you know, he's a – coming in there as a wide receiver slash kick returner. He's a smaller guy. I'd say, what, maybe 5'10". But they had him in early mini camps. They had him lining up at quarterback. So they do have some big plans for him. You know, he looks like he's just a multi-threat. He could be a receiver, running back, quarterback, knows how to throw the ball. So just that's my pick for a guy to collect. My bust, and I'm sorry to say this, Dan, but Tavon Austin. I think the guy's going to be a bust. His attitude around that event, and I'm not going to say who told me this, but they said that he only wanted to sign a certain amount of autographs. He walked around there looking at all the photos that people took. Like when Panini took a photo of him, he had to see what it looked like. Just the look on his face, you know, just the look on his – and he had an agent, I think, with him because he had somebody following him around the whole time that was asking him what they can do. So he had, like, some kind of assistant with him already. I mean, I know when you get a big contract, he's probably one of the higher-paid guys at the rookie premiere. You know, maybe you hire somebody to handle your funds or walk around, make sure everything's okay. I understand that fact, so I'm not hating on him for that. But just, I don't know. He just didn't seem accessible and just already seemed like he is a superstar. Like, I'm going to be a superstar, and you guys just have to deal with it.
I agree with you on that, and I completely understand where you're coming from because I saw the same exact thing, and I think I actually made a reference about it while we were there. But you do got to realize that these card companies have probably been kissing up to him because they know that he may be the most marketable guy that they have. So they probably gave him the most money. They've been kissing up to him saying, like, you know, how great he is and all this stuff because he's basically what they're going to build their products around. He may be the chase card. He was the if I'm not mistaken, the number one skill position player taken in the first round.
Correct.
Everybody else was offensive line, defensive line. So I think he basically went in there with the attitude and probably was told by a handful of people that you're going to be the most marketable guy by these two companies. And he probably went in there with the swag. He had the swagger for sure. I don't know if he's going to be a bust because of that. And he may have character issues, but we'll see. Cause I've seen other interviews with him that didn't have to do with card companies. And he seemed like a pretty well-spoken, down to earth kid. I just think he was maybe fluffed a little bit going into there. And, He may got a big head going into the rookie premiere, being told that he was the guy who's going to be driving these products, and he was the guy who got paid the most. Let's face it, he probably got the biggest contract by the two companies than anybody else there.
Yeah, and him and probably Gino. Maybe Gino got Gino probably got a fairly large contract.
I don't think Gino, based on where he was drafted, maybe EJ Manuel.
It's probably one of those two guys. Those guys might be two or three.
It wouldn't surprise me if we had the numbers in front of us. I could almost guarantee you Tavon Austin got the biggest paycheck by the two companies.
Walking in there,
him knowing that, because the companies probably told him, yeah, we're paying you more than we're paying anybody else. So going in there knowing that he's the highest paid rookie at that event, you know, probably inflated the ego a little bit.
We'll see.
I mean, he has a lot of things going against him in the NFL. I mean, fact that he is a smaller guy, going to be going against bigger DBs, going to be trying to get open. It's going to be difficult. But we'll see. The Rams are going to have some creative ways to get the ball in his hands, probably without running routes.
Yeah, they've already said that they will make him an integral part of the offense. So if he was drafted last year, I mean, he'd probably be on the same level as possibly a Jarius Wright, you know, with that class. Maybe not that high, but maybe after Trent Richardson, Doug Martin, maybe he'd be right after them. So that just
if he would have came out last year, he would have been a late first round pick.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a whole lot of wide receivers drafted early last year either. There was Justin Blackman and Michael Floyd.
There was Blackman, but Blackman's in the physically closer to being in the mold of like an Andre Johnson, Calvin Johnson. He's a bigger guy.
Right.
I mean, the comparisons that you're going to get right now with Tavon Austin is going to be Dexter McCluster, because they're kind of built like the same type of player. It's just the Chiefs have never been able to figure out how to get McCluster into the game. Like they've tried pretty much everything, but everything hasn't worked or nothing's worked. So,
right.
I think the comparisons going into the season is Tavon Austin is going to be like a Dexter McCluster. It just depends on what kind of game plan the Rams have going forward with him.
Definitely. Well, I wanted to do this I wanted to do a giveaway real quick. We're going to give away a spot in our NBA random for tomorrow. It's two boxes of Momentum and three boxes of the Preferred. So it's random team style. And what you got to do is you got to go on sportscardradio.com and check out Brilliance Basketball that's coming out tomorrow. Look for the checklist. And I want to know who's number one on the base card checklist. I want the player's name. So you got to call in to give you guys the number here, 347-855-8815. Once again, 347-855-8815. And go on sportscardradio.com and find the checklist for Panini Brilliance Basketball that comes out tomorrow. I want the number one guy on the checklist, and that'll get you a free spot in tomorrow's random of basketball. I'll let Gary Payton tell you about that one.
Hey, y'all, this is Gary Payton. Hey, mojobreak.com, they just came up.
So, yeah, a little Gary Payton from last year's summit. But yeah, first person to call in, 347-855-8815. That's the newly enshrined Hall of Famer, Gary Payton.
I love the backing. I love the backing track. That is some nice smooth jazz underneath. I dig it.
Yeah, that was a creation of myself with some Adobe product that I barely know how to use. Surprisingly, I was able to figure that out. But yeah, he was very cool in the summit, Gary Payton. That was a 2011 industry summit. So, I know you got to be getting out of here pretty soon. But let's go ahead and get into the reviews of some product that came out last week. Very big baseball product, 2013 Museum Collection. Dropped last Wednesday, and looks like it's a good set. Prices are going up. People are chasing certain cards. Give me your thoughts, positive and negative, about Museum, Dan.
Well, if it's not broke, don't fix it. The Museum framed cards, like on card, those are amazing. Those are great chase cards. The checklist this time seemed like it was huge. I mean, they have a lot of guys signed in those, and they also have the gold and the silver variation. Killer-looking cards, though. On card, amazing. Again, they did an amazing job with that set. The box, I think they're like box toppers or box floaters of the Canvas collection. I have not seen a live one yet. We did pull one of the standard sized Canvas collection. Those are hand drawn. Those are amazing as well. I love the look of those. I mean, if they weren't so expensive, I'd love to collect the whole set of those because those are killer looking.
Yeah,
real artsy, but definitely well done. Nice swatches. It seems like every quad that you get has like a nice multicolored. Like quad, like four player swatches. You get one that has a really nice multicolored prime patch. Not tons of base. I think it's like one parallel per pack. Cool set. I think it's gonna. You know, I gotta say, I thought it was better than Tribute.
Definitely.
If I had a couple hundred bucks that I was going to spend and I'm looking for a box of cards, even though it's only four hits over six hits, I'm going to go Museum Collection. I think it's just
definitely
a better value, a better looking card. And yeah, I give props to Tops.
Let's say we got a couple callers. We're going to go ahead and bring on 305. 305, you're on the air. Who are we speaking with?
Hal Horford.
Hey, what's up, man?
My name's
Winner.
Cool.
And who are you? Your name's not Al Horford. If we're talking Al Horford, I'd be like,
hey, you're on the fantasy team this year. I made a big mistake going to Florida instead of UM, but we'll deal with that now.
And I'm sorry, what was your name now?
Trevor.
I know you see you in the chat, man. Thanks for giving us some info here. So you're going to go ahead and win that spot in the basketball break tomorrow. So it's Trevor G. And just drop us a DM on Twitter with your email so we make sure we get you the cards and stuff.
Awesome.
Go ahead. I was going to say, what have you been collecting lately? You have any questions for us on any value on cards? Or what are you into lately?
I really like the preferred booklets. I got a Heat booklet. This is dirt cheap, which doesn't really make sense when the cards are all awesome, but the highlight of that product to me is the booklets. And some of the booklets, if they don't include laundry tags, are very inexpensive.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to buy right now. I think if you hold on to it for a year, if you are looking to sell it, you'll see that the market's not quite as saturated with them. I think everybody's opening it right now, and that's why you see that they're cheap. But, you know, you wait a year, you probably get more out of the card.
And they did a nice job with the groupings. Obviously, I'm a fan of the Heat, which is a pretty in-demand team, but even if you were a Bobcats fan, some Bobcats fans would like a now-soon-to-be Hornets card with a few past, present, and hopefully future star kind of players.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Bird. Big fan of Preferred for sure. What did you think about any of the other basketball releases, like Momentum or Limited? Was there any of them that you really liked?
I'm looking forward to the Brilliant also. But the past and present banners were very nice with the felt on them. But otherwise, it was kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say low end, but I guess it was trying to appeal to everyone.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Definitely a lot of subsets and more of a retail-y, if that's a word-ish, feel to the past and present cards. But definitely some old-school autos and, you know, some SPs in there. I agree with you.
And so you guys got me pretty concerned about, are the autographs really authentic or not? But if it's certified by Topps or Panini or whoever, and if you really have to get it authenticated, and you're right, they will take care of you if it turns out that it's not the real deal.
Yeah, and you don't have to be worried if there's a Topps or Panini stamp on it. I think it's just something for us to talk about here. You won't. It's a very isolated incident that's out there, I think. And, yeah, you won't have – if it Topps and Panini stamps on it, you're not going to have to worry about it on the secondary market.
Cool. Well, you guys do an awesome job, and I will see you tomorrow night.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for calling in, and thanks for listening and hanging out in the chat. We appreciate it, man. All right. Well, that was cool. Trevor, winner, winner. But, yeah, to get back into museum, I kind of agree with Dan. I if it's not broke, don't fix it. I don't think there was anything mind-blowing with it. The art cards are very cool, and it's great to see something like that sell that doesn't have an autograph or a jersey piece on the card. So you got some hand drawn. I mean, we pulled a Mike Trout, and those things look like they're going for like $200-$300, and, you know, Mike Trout didn't even touch the card. So that's what's cool about that. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting autos in the set. There's some – you know, Jackie Robinson Chase, you know, cut autos. I believe that the Babe Ruth cut auto was pulled, so that one's gone. But it's a pretty good set. The museum cards that came out in Marquee are prevalent again, and you get one per case in this set, and the highest they're numbered are 15. So those are really cool. Those should grade really well. they got the bat plates. Yeah, I think overall it's a great set. I was talking to Clay from Topps at the rookie premiere. I don't know exactly his official title is, but I know he's up there, and I know he does a lot with Topps. And he was asking our feedback on it, and I told him it was great, and they did a good job with it. And I do agree with you that if I had money to spend, I would get museum instead of tribute. Have you seen anything about it, Ryan? I know you guys put up the checklist and anything. Have you done any research on eBay or seen any of these museum cards yet?
Nope. I'll have to take your guys' word for it. You know, to be perfectly honest, aside from the summit and this rookie premiere thing, I really don't know a whole lot about any of the sets that have come out, aside from maybe spending a couple hours putting a checklist up. So I'm going to take your guys' word on the game that it was good. The one thing that Clay mentioned, though, when we were sitting there, was the fact that now some of the product goes to Japanese. What I'm not clear on is it in Japanese writing, the card? Or is it English? It's the same set of cards goes over there to Japan.
It's the same set, except they have different inserts of the cards. So
okay.
I'm not sure how they do museum.
It's in English?
Yeah. Well,
so? Okay.
Bowman Sterling was in English, but they had Japan fractors, which were numbered to 5, and they had like, I don't know how to explain it. It was like a superfractor background. You know how the superfractor has those circles in the background of the card?
Right.
These were like diamonds in the background. And so you could only pull it out of a Japanese sterling box. So they had the autoed versions of them. They had the parallels of the base of the Japanese refractors. I'm not exactly sure what their plans are for the museum version of it. Talking to Lloyd from GTS, I think they're going to have more exclusive stuff in this for Japan, but I'm glad you brought that up because I totally forgot about that they actually are making separate sets for Japan. So that just shows you how much, you know, collector base is in Japan if they've caught wind of that and they're starting to make Japan-only sets.
Yeah, I was really interested in that, too. I didn't know about that. I was unaware. So I'll have to do a little more research on that maybe and see the second pair. I'm assuming those cards end up somewhere, either on eBay Japan or eBay US or something. So I thought that was cool. They did that, and I had no clue that they had done that previously for one of the sets. So
I wonder what the
yeah.
run is for that that set. I mean, there's really no way to really know, I guess. I mean, but I mean, obviously they probably make less of that than they make the with the U.S. distribution.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said it was very limited.
This is actually very – I just found the sell sheet for it. This is very interesting. It's offered exclusively in Asia by GTS Distribution. So they're the only distributor that has their hands on this. There's Asia-based set parallels numbered to 50 copies. There's archival autographs only found in Asia of Tiyoshi Wada and Hishawi Awakuma. They show Hishawi Awakuma and Tiyoshi Wada on the sell sheet. They also have a lot of Darvish on the sell sheet, as well as Norchika Aoki. They do have Josh Hamilton on here as well. So they have cut signatures with the Asia market in mind. So that's what the sell sheet says. So, yeah, very interesting that GTS has the market cornered on that.
Sounds like
many
were thing. They probably came up with the idea, honestly.
Could have been, yeah.
Manny Ramirez was playing in Japan, right?
Yep.
Any Manny Ramirez autos?
I'm not sure, but did you see that video of him sliding in a second? I think it was about a week ago. I don't know who he's playing for because I don't know my Japan baseball, but it was basically a double play ball, and Manny slid. He pulled one of those Willie Mays Hayes where he slid like 10 feet before the bag. Well, Manny's a big boy now, so Manny's not going to slide any farther than he did when he was 20. So he stopped about 5 feet short. Well, it just so happened that the ball was like overthrown. So if he would actually ran to the bag, he would have been safe. And he just washed off the field, and the guys in the dugout still gave him a high five because it's like, oh, you're Manny Ramirez, you know, with the dreads.
Dude. It's just Manny being Manny. Come on.
Seriously. We did, and back to the Museum Japan, we did get asked at GTS that they said if we wanted to do the Museum Japan, and actually he asked me to do the Sterling Japan, but he said we could only sell it to Japan customers.
Right.
So we didn't, I mean, we do have a few Japan customers that break with us, but the market wasn't big enough for us to take that on. I mean, maybe we could have tried, but obviously most of our clientele base is, you know, in America, so it might be kind of hard to fill breaks that way.
Yeah.
So, and just to touch on a few other sets that you know what? Before we get into archive, I know I'm bouncing all over the place today. Did you guys hear about Vic? Vic apparently never knew how to hold a ball. Chip Kelly taught Michael Vick how to carry a football. So for 10 years, Michael Vick never knew how to properly carry a football.
Interesting.
So he played 10 seasons, but Chip Kelly actually had some kind of little mini camp with them that he taught him how to run with the football and properly carry it.
Huh.
Yeah,
I think Vic's running days may be behind him. I think it's a little too late for that. I mean, he has some guys, you know, in the wings that basically could take his job at a drop of a hat. Now, I mean,
yeah,
we'll see what happens with training camp. I mean, Nick Foles, Matt Barkley, who gets the backup role. I think right now it's probably going to be Nick Foles, but they also got Dennis Dixon as well, who played under Chip Kelly in Oregon.
Right.
So they're going into camp with at least four, maybe five quarterbacks. So we'll see. I think it's basically the twilight of Michael Vick's career. We'll see if he can turn it around.
One last gasp of brilliance next year, maybe.
Maybe.
Well, you know, just to touch on 2013 archives, I thought it was Archives Football, that is. I thought it was a really cool set. I think the only thing that was deceiving about Archives Football was the fact that on the sell sheet, I think they showed a lot more of 2012 rookies. It made you led you to believe that there was a lot more opportunities for 2012 rookie autographs, which there are some in there, but they're very short printed. The autos that you get are the fan favorite autos, which me as a kid that grew up in the 80s saw some really cool stuff. Christian Okoye, Brent Jones autos, Steve Bartkowski autos. It was a really pretty cool checklist for Archives. A lot of cool subsets, the 1986 Topps design. Dan, what did you think about Archives Football?
I thought it was confusing. I mean, is it a 2012 set or 2013 set? And I always complain about them releasing a product too late in the season. I'm always like, oh, if they would have released this like a couple months earlier, it would have been great. Well, in this set, if they would have released it later in the year, it may have made sense. But I think right now, after the draft, you're calling it 2013. They do have redemptions for this year's draft class, but they're hard to pull. And they had 2012 rookies in there, and they had autos, and they were SP'd. But are they rookie cards? Are they not rookie cards? It's hard. I don't know.
Yeah.
The tall boys are cool, and those are box toppers, and those are autoed number to 25. This set should have came out in the middle of the season when they release Gridiron and when they release some of that stuff. The price point's right. The on card autos are cool. The fan favorite checklist is cool. It's just everybody's thinking 2013 rookie class right now, and when you release the first 2013 set, it has no 2013 rookie cards in it.
Right.
And you're trying to pawn off the 2012 as rookies. It was a confusing set, and they should have released it later on in the season. Overall, it still has a decent value. Cool card design, just a little confusing. Great on-card autos. I thought the fan favorite, again, that checklist was pretty solid. You know, I don't know if I can say that. If it didn't have Willie Flipper Anderson, I don't know if I can say that. But since it had Willie Flipper Anderson and I own a Willie Flipper Anderson now, it's good.
Well, I'm looking at recent sales. I just typed in 2013 Archives Auto, and I did highest price first. The top of the list is all the big-name rookies from 2012. So, and Andrew Luck was tall boy, number 1 of 25, was $1,500, but it says best offer, so it might have been less. It doesn't tell me here on eBay. There was an actual Jerry Rice 2013 1986 original. So they basically bought back the Jerry Rice rookie card. They had him sign it on the card, and they stamped it to 5. So that sold for $721. So pretty good value. And then there's also, we didn't see him in a case, but there's framed mini autographs of the 2012 quarterbacks, rookie class and such. So I see an Andrew Luck selling where somebody's trying to get 700. Robert Griffin got 465. Go down the list. They have Mystery Player in there. And that sold for 200. It's a redemption, just says Mystery Players. They haven't named them yet. So those are selling for a lot because people are speculating on who they could be. It takes me a while. Monty Ball sold for 101, and those are all redemptions. So Monty Ball, redemption. Eddie Lacy sold for 81. So there's not – these fan favorite autographs are probably at the highest, $20. So those aren't very good, going for much. So if you want to collect some old school guys – you know, get some at some very good prices right now. They do have a very interesting cut auto checklist. One of my boys, Bob Saget, has a cut auto 101 in Archives Football.
You just say Bob Saget?
Bob Saget.
From Full House?
Yes. From Full House.
Danny Tanner?
Danny Tanner has a cut auto in Archives.
Dude.
That's pretty cool.
Badass.
I don't know if it's been pulled, There's a Christy Brinkley one of one. There's a Gary Coleman one of one that they're showing here that looks like it was signed on a wicker basket. So that's on there. The Danny DeVito was pulled. So those are the four that they know of, I guess. But those are inserted randomly in the set. The Bob Saget one, that's awesome. I don't know how much that would sell for, but that's pretty cool.
Well, shouldn't sell much for much more than $20, but it probably will. I mean, it's,
well, being that's a one-on-one, it'll probably sell for like $100.
It's Bob Saget. Yeah, I mean, you could basically you can go see him at the Improv, and he'll probably give you an auto.
Yeah, there's the Danny DeVito's up there for $750. Somebody's trying to get. No. There's that Harry. Yeah, yep, Danny DeVito. And I can't find any. I'm trying to find some more cut autos if they've been pulled. That's the only one I can find. The other one was courtesy of Beckett. They had a little article, and that's how I found out about Bob Saget. Oh, no, Bob Saget's up there. Bids. It's $38.
All right.
Two days left. I think I'm going to hit it up. The Gary Coleman is up there, too.
I got to go put in a bid.
That's pretty cool, man. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. I did want to bring up this, you know, we talk about Topps customer service. There was actually a forum post on Blowout about this guy had a good amount of redemptions, and he actually ran down his list on what he got for them. So 2012 Bowman Platinum Auto, Tyrell Jenkins. His replacement was Charlie Tilson. So, you know, two are in the same system. That's not bad. He was also due a blue refractor of Tyrell Jenkins. They sent him a 2012 Bowman Platinum blue refractor of Brian Brickhouse. So the guy saying that it's not fair, Jenkins has superstar potential and Brickhouse is a scrub. One guy's opinion. He was due a 2012 platinum black refractor auto of Joe Adams. They sent him a 2011 Topps Platinum Auto of Cecil Shorts. So
that's my
boy.
The
card that he was due was supposed to be numbered to 150. He got a card that was numbered to 1,000. He was due a 2012 Bowman Platinum Gold Refractor of Anthony Rendon. His replacement was a 2012 Blue Wave Auto of Dante Bichette Jr.
Oh.
That one hurt. Yeah. And it's a Blue Wave, and Dante, I mean, we all know how well Anthony Rendon sells for. The worst one on this list, the other two he has aren't bad. 2012 Bowman Platinum Auto Jumbo Relic Printing Plate of Garrett Cole. He got a 2012 Bowman Refractor Auto of Eddie Rosario.
No. Hey, Eddie Rosario is doing pretty good. But...
So this is the letter that they sent him. He put the letter up on the Blowout forum. It says,
they wrote him a John Deere letter.
They did. It said, check this out. After going over your redemption replacement with our distribution center, there was only one card that the value was off, and we will be replacing that card for you. All other replacement cards are of equal Beckett value. The card that is being replaced is 2012 Bowman Platinum Auto Jumbo Printing Plate of Garrett Cole. I apologize for that mess up. Your replacement cards will ship from our distribution center enclosed with this letter are the cards that we cannot replace. It doesn't say. So they did take ownage of the really bad, mess up on the Garrett Cole. So that's good. But I don't really like how they use the term Beckett value because – Dante Bichette Beckett value may be the same as Anthony Rendon, but Anthony Rendon is selling for 10 times more on eBay. So,
yeah.
I mean, they should probably go by completed listings on eBay. I don't know if that's too much work, but I guess at least they're trying. I give them that. They tried. They reached out to this guy. They sent him a letter on why. I'm assuming this letter was in reply to him. He probably got the cards and he was pissed. So he probably sent them something, and this is the reply back is what I'm kind of, you know, digging in to find out here. So, I mean, probably more often than not, most collectors just keep what they get. I mean, that's a big difference from a 101 to a Eddie Rosario number to 500 refractor.
But they didn't send him a Jeremy Hellickson, huh?
No.
Awesome. More for
so,
me.
More for you, Dan.
But what that does tell me is that obviously whoever is packing out the cards does not have any idea of value of cards, which isn't surprising.
Right. That's why they
– yeah.
It's a shame that they throw Beckett kind of under the bus saying, oh, well, we use Beckett value or whatever. And, but I've told a lot of people this. Start a website and start pricing every single card and see how far you get. You will not have a successful website. You'll be shut down. You'll quit. So
yeah.
Todd shouldn't even put Beckett in this position to where now the collector might be mad at Beckett. Well, they don't update
yeah.
their prices and da 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 da. Whereas there's no relationship there at all. I don't think Beckett probably says, hey, you can use our prices for, replacement. But, there's no kind of like hard set in stone, especially with the Garrett Cole, isn't it a 101 printing plate? So there's no book value on that card. But Beckett doesn't
right.
price those cards. So there's not even a book value on that card. So like you said, Doug, the person redeeming the cards has no idea what they're doing because they just see, oh, Garrett Cole, $50. Oh, this Eddie Rosario is $50. Okay, throw it in the back and set it off.
Yeah.
You know, Garrett Cole's the number one pick in the whole draft, wasn't he? If I'm not mistaken, he's top five at least.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
He was number one.
Yep.
So they could use Beckett. I don't think Beckett is terribly off, actually, all the time on some of their values. I think on some of the lesser they're right on. But when a player gets hot like Rendon, and he just got called up, they do have to go to eBay. They do have to subscribe to Therapy because, like, you were just looking at prices on eBay, and you're not able to see a lot of times what the final value for it. So, I mean, I spend $30 a month on Therapy so that I can see all those things and sort through data on eBay and sort make, Excel sheets so I can analyze some stuff. So Pop should invest in that. And then they could easily say, well, I use Therapy on such and such date. They can eBay only goes back a certain amount of ways, but Therapy you can go back the whole year. $30 a month is not a lot of money for Pop at all. So it's something they should be utilizing. They could also utilize Beckett, but they could utilize both. Check both. Check
yeah.
Beckett.
Yeah.
Check eBay. You know, it might be that you're sending him something too good back. That the Beckett value is too high, or what you're sending him back should be worth a little more, or it sells for a little more on eBay. So just use both. It's really quick. It's a quick search. Boom, 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 boom. Search the two cards that you're thinking about sending him back. Have
yeah.
everything that's all your replacements. Have a spreadsheet of the values of all those. Just have the employees, when there's downtime, look up the values, eBay values of all the replacements that they have on stock. Just sit there and do it. They're getting paid anyways to be there. So just sit there and do it. Categorize it and have an Excel sheet so that you not only have the backing value, but you also have a date, a point in time when this eBay value was this amount. So,
well, what about, I don't know, this could be more work than it's necessary for them. But you know that $1 million code giveaway that they don't use anymore where you could get cards and stuff like that? Why don't they upload, like, the available replacements and have, like, categories and actually let the customer decide between maybe five options of what they want? I don't know if they're giving these guys options. It doesn't sound like it. Because I haven't had that. I have some outstanding redemptions at this point that I haven't gotten yet, so I don't know what the options are. But, I mean, what if the guy sees, you know, say he's I'm a Giants fan, and, my Gary Brown I'm waiting on, I didn't get, but they give me five options, and one of them is Clayton Blackburn. Maybe Clayton Blackburn doesn't sell for as much, but I would be happy with that because I'm a Giants collector. Like, if I see the options of what I can get from my replacements. I don't know if that's feasible for them to do, but they might have less complaints if they actually kind of keep it like a check out my cards type of inventory. And when this person submits a request, they have, category A is any kind of auto from $1 to $10. Category B is 20 to 50, and they let them pick from that until the inventory's gone, and then they put new cards in there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it would be feasible. It would be feasible, but it's not feasible because they you know, like I said, they want to pass everything. They want to pass customer service down to the distributor. They want to say that, well, we're using Beckett values, so complain to them if you didn't get the right replacement. They always want to pass it down. So for them to actually set up a structure where they're giving you a choice and they're giving you a pick one of five for your Garrett Cole printing plate, it's just it's not something Topps going to do. They're just too cheap, too lazy, doesn't matter to them, not a priority. It's one threat on blowout. And they don't care,
right?
Because they can just give away some stuff. They can just give away some stuff or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's not going to hurt their sales in the long run.
Well, they already got their money. I mean,
yeah,
right.
At this point, the money that they've received from that customer is gone. Like that's long gone. They've already got that. So I mean, they're like, whatever. I mean, you choose to buy another set of cards. You choose to buy another box of cards from us, and it's up to you. And again, like you said, it's one thread. You know, I mean, it's not gonna destroy them. It's not even gonna get a reaction out of them. I'm surprised the guy got a letter back saying admitting that they screwed up on that one card. That's
a bold step.
That's surprising. That's headed in the right direction. That's taking ownership. That's taking responsibility for something that you screwed up, rather than knowing that it's a bad situation and dragging Beckett in there with you and being like, well, if we're going to get screwed on this, you're going to come with us, even though Beckett like didn't do anything. They're not involved in this. They didn't get any money for this product being sold to anybody. They're just using it as a basis of what this card's worth. And now Beckett's dragged into it. So you're like, oh, well, we got our price from that guy. So if you have a problem, it's his fault because he basically told us what the value of the card is. So now it's like dropping the blame on somebody else, like a third party that's not even invested. That's just flat out wrong.
Go ahead. No.
It seems like that's what they're trying to do with getting the distributors involved in replacements and customer service situations, where they're like, "Oh, well, don't have a problem with us. You got to have a problem with the third party that we hired to do this, and this is their problem now." I mean, it just seems like they're trying to drop the ball and make it somebody else's problem, instead of just dealing with it. Hiring, all they got to do is hire about 5 to 10 different people and just have a customer service department, not one person. Like have 10 people who basically do research on cards and make sure that you do get the correct value. And I understand it's hard to give somebody the correct value because with baseball cards, it's like the stock market. They could change on a daily, value could change on a daily basis. Like, Raymond can get called up tomorrow, hit a walk-off homer, go 4 for 4, and his cards are 10 times the amount they were the previous day.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I understand how it's difficult, but
you got to do something. I mean, that kind of goes, obviously, we deal with it on a smaller level, but we've had, you know, maybe the mailman damaged the guy's card that we pulled in a break, or the guy messed up on his shipping address and we shipped it to the wrong place. I couldn't imagine if somebody pulled like an Andrew Luck and it got damaged in the mail and I went, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and send you a Ryan Leaf. Here's your replacement. You know, no, we've actually went and bought on eBay the same exact card, maybe different numbering, obviously, but we've actually bought the same card for the person. I don't know why, you know, Topps doesn't kind of consider that these cards are valuable to these people and people want this card.
It comes down to accountability. Someone has to take accountability. And, you know, taking accountability is not always the easiest road to travel. And being like, oh, look, I screwed up. It was my fault. It was our fault. that is a crappy thing to have to tell somebody, but at the end of the day, it's the only way that problems get solved is by taking accountability.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and I know they have, on a positive note, they have stepped up a little bit on certain aspects. I mean, being that they sent that letter, so that's a step in the right direction. So I don't want to always seem like we're complaining about it, but, you know, it just, you hear these stories. Maybe people aren't putting the good stories up. I want to hear you guys' good stories on this stuff so that I can say, hey, you know, 5 out of 6 times they took care of it. It was only the one out of the 6 that they didn't, or the 1 out of 10 that they didn't, or the 1 out of 20 that they didn't. So,
yeah,
but
honestly, the three of us, like, we know what the ratio basically comes down to.
Yeah.
Good stories and bad stories.
Well, I mean, yes and no, but I mean, I'm thinking about it now. I mean, think about all the people that have skunked in breaks compared to the people that have done good. We only hear about the bad. We don't hear much about the good every time. You know, the person that maybe got $60 of their $50, you know, they spent $50, they got $60 in cards. They're not going to say, oh, my God, I did well. I mean, they did.
But we're talking about, I understand where you're coming from, but let's talk about hands-on experience. I mean, we've all had our run-ins and our situations with their customer service, like hands-on, like personally, we've had these issues. So,
yeah, it's true.
I mean, not only it's like it's happened personally, but we've heard a million stories about how it's been an issue for a long time. And I understand that they are trying to work out the course and make it better, but you know, there's a long way to go.
I do agree. There is a long way to go.
And I understand that people are more inclined to put a story out there about a situation where they got screwed, more so than a situation where they were taken care of. And I understand that. People are more inept to complain about a situation than to praise a situation. But how many
And believe me, the only reason I'm saying that is because I'm trying to be a devil's advocate here.
I know. I feel you.
Hopefully it changes. It may not change. It may not change. They're making money. Who cares, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they're still making money. They're still printing up. They're still making the world's largest trading cards. So.
Yeah, and I wish I didn't. I wish it can be different. I wish I can be like, man, they always take care of everybody. It's a great situation. It's awesome. I wish I can say that. But if I did, I'd be lying. I'm not saying that there's certain situations and certain problems that they have taken care of, but the majority, it's subpar at best. And there's tons and tons of collectors that would definitely agree with us. So
for sure.
Yeah. I gotta cut out here.
I gotta see you in a little while.
I'll see you guys later. Bye.
Yep. What were we gonna say, Ryan?
Oh, I was just gonna say, just to put something quickly in perspective, Tops and where they are. At the GTS distribution, Wizards of the Coast, the people who make Magic the Gathering, probably the biggest kind of trading card game. You could consider them, I guess, the Tops of the gaming card world. They did a presentation, and first of all, there were no questions. They did a similar presentation like they would at the Summit or at the National Tops of the thing. There were no questions about customer service at this Wizards of Coast presentation. And one of the things that struck me is they had a little PowerPoint, same idea as like at the Vegas Summit, you know, the same thing. Wizards of Coast doing a presentation. They put up something for something called Modern Masters or something that's coming out in June. I have no idea what it's about. I have no freaking clue. Everybody in the room started to cheer. And I remember just sitting there thinking to myself, I'm trying to remember the last time I've ever seen a company, Tops or Panini, at one of these kind of presentation kind of gig things, put up a sell sheet or put up a PowerPoint, and all the dealers in the room start cheering. I can't even remember something like that.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Sure, it's a product.
in terms of a product, because Panini sometimes will announce customer service things or a Black Friday promotion or something, and people will be excited and cheer about that. But a specific product that is going to come out, these people were very excited about the set, and I think it just goes to show you that there is a little bit of a gap. These guys are cranking out these sports sets just boom, 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 boom. Whereas these Magic the Gathering sets come out a lot less frequently. They're a lot less complicated. They're not as complicated, at least in terms of the structure of the card. Now, the game itself appears to be kind of complicated, how they set it up and the point values and da-da-da-da-da and all these kind of different things. But the cards don't have autographs. They don't have jerseys. They're not printing as many. All these times, they don't have to get licensing with this guy and this person and autograph deals with Kevin Austin and, you know, on and down the line. So there's a lot of pressure on these card companies to just crank out sets really quickly, get them out, boom, boom, boom. And I think that's really a problem in the industry that probably is never going to be rectified. There's just way too much product that gets cranked out, and nobody can really get excited about anything aside from a few sets. And we just had one, Bowman. Top Chrome Football, maybe, is another set that you can actually really get excited about. All this other stuff is very niche. Brilliance Basketball, niche. Museum Collection Baseball, niche. Archive Football, pretty much crap. And most of the stuff that Panini comes out with is very, very niche. It doesn't get exposed to a lot of people. Not widely collected. So
yeah, I wonder, it makes me think, are we getting, you know, is this industry getting stale? You know, maybe it's the oversaturation, like you're saying. You know, maybe the people behind this, I mean, like, I'm excited about stuff. I wouldn't be the first guy to cheer. Maybe it's because I've only been in the industry for, on a serious business level, for 2 or 3 years. Maybe these guys that have been in this industry for 20 or 30 years just dread this stuff. I don't know. You know, maybe it's, you know, they're just looking forward to retirement. Maybe the gaming thing is so much more of a newer concept that these guys are a lot more excited about it. I don't know what it is, but you're right. I mean, these guys just sit there. I don't even know why they got these guys. Some of these guys go to the summit. They just sit there and don't say anything. It's like maybe they just came for Vegas, you know? I don't know.
And the thing with the Magic cards, there's value to these cards, not in a monetary sense, because you can go play a game. You can play these tournaments, and a guy describes them to me like poker tournaments. There's a buy-in fee. You have your deck of 40 cards or whatever they allow at this tournament. You get to choose all these cards, and then you play, you know, you play the Magic game. You can play with your friends at school. Whereas with an Andrew Luck autograph, you don't want to be handling it that much. You're going to just store it away in a box. Maybe you're going to sell it. There's nothing tangible about these cards aside from, you know, it's an Andrew Luck autograph card. You know, big whoopsie doo.
Yeah,
you can't do anything with it. You can't play a game. I love the Topps little codes. They should have those in every pack. Kids would eat that stuff up if you could go and get a virtual. Like Topps Attacks, they just didn't do it well enough. And I think they tried some of these online games and stuff a little too early in the game, and they got ripped off. I know Panini spent about $75,000 in this group in Canada to set up a game for them. They spent about $2.3 million on Adrenaline, and they don't even make that set anymore, so that all that money's gone. And some of the top games are a mess. The Prospect Challenge and the Hitting Streak. I always hear about people. You can go to the Topps Facebook page. Actually, it's really good, better than the forums. You go to the Topps Facebook page and you click Post by Others, and you can just they run contests so that it looks good at times. But you sit through all the contest crap, and it's just people ripping and customer service wise. I can't continue my streak. I lost a player on my Bowman Prospect Challenge. And they just don't, they're not technically savvy enough there. They don't have enough people on staff there, and they third-party all this stuff out, just like they do the pricing, just like they do everything pretty much at that company. They third-party, the people working for them at the premiere were all third-party. It was a lot of third-party staffing. Those are people who do not work for Topps. They're just a third-party staffing, the people that were handling the cards and stuff. So it's just – it's
yeah, I just jumped on there. I just jumped on there. I mean, I thought I'd get a – I mean, I get a few hate mails every once in a while, you know. Man, holy crap.
It's fun reading.
Thanks for my blaster of Topps Gridiron, and there was no inserts. I got screwed out of $20. I'm tired of waiting for my redemptions from 2011. How can a business take 2 years to fulfill a redemption? I keep calling customer service and just get the runaround. I have to ask for another autograph of the same player. Am I due to receive a replacement? There's a lot of them, man. Holy crap. There's a few thank yous, but yeah. Crazy. But I think
I was going to say, honestly, the people kissing their butt on there are just trying to win contests. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
Pretty much.
I try to tell the truth straight up. The people that kiss Top's butt most of the time are trying to win something out of them or trying to get something out of them. That's just being
or
real.
Like this guy pulled a Mike Trout number to 10. Obviously, he's pretty happy. So he posted the picture to Topps Twitter.
Oh, well, that's cool. Yeah, if you pull a great card, then for sure give him props. But just the random, like, kind of trying to buddy up to Topps. I mean, you're just trying to win something. You're trying to get a retweet. You're trying to get something out of them, basically. Get them in your good graces, I think. For the most part.
Here's another one. It says, called your customer service today. Got a message. I was caller number 9, and the wait was 18 minutes. 49 minutes later, your customer service rep and a supervisor could not tell me why my redemption code for a Nolan Ryan autographed frame oversized canvas collection box loader would not work. Also, didn't have a clue about what the card would be. Should have asked them about this card. They have a Brooks Robinson card that lists him at second base when he was a third baseman. So, but. Yeah, I feel bad for their Twitter supervisor here, whoever, or maybe no one looks at it. Back to the gaming thing, I think you're right. I think the reason why people are excited is because they get to go play something. When you get this card, and I hate to bring up the gambling aspect of the hobby, but let's face it, most of us are gamblers, and we're gambling on a box of cards. A lot of us that buy a $250 box, some of us can't afford a $250 box, but we talk ourselves into doing it because we think we can pull this massive card that we're going to be able to sell. Or we go, oh, all I need to do is pull one Trout and I keep the 3 and sell the Trout. And so that you bust this $250 card and you get $20 worth of cards and you feel so bad. I mean, you feel like, oh, man, you know, I $250, I could have paid off a credit card. I could have bought my wife something, and now I can't even take her out on Friday night. Man, why did I buy this box? So there's some remorse on some customers. And I hate to bring that up because I hope there's not that many stories out there, but I know there is because I've talked to these people. They've been customers of mine that have told me afterwards that they shouldn't even have been buying it, but they do. So at least with the gaming side of things, I think people, it's cheap enough and it's fun and it's something that you can do. Cardboard gets thrown in a box and, you know, you maybe sell it or you maybe pull them out and look at it occasionally.
Right. And another point, I know we're running out of time. Another point I want to make about the gaming that's different than cards, it's a big deal on release day. And they have promo packs for these sets. And all the shop owners are saying, oh, yeah, you got to do a midnight release. And you'll be there till 7 a.m. And it's packed. And you make fucking $5,000 in your pocket. And it's a big thing, the release day. And the release day should be the same idea with the cards. Every case breaker, you guys should have a case on release day, and it should be a big, exciting thing. It should be something that Topps promotes and everybody promotes. And I could have information, you know, on release day that, you got to come check out that checklist, and, da, 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 and all the hobby shops are going to run these promotions, and it's this big deal, and Topps sends out an email and promotes it. But they don't.
Yeah.
These sets just kind of come out magically, like, oh, wow, Square Football's on eBay, but, oh, my distributor doesn't have it, my hobby shop doesn't have it, Blowout's not shipping it until next week. Oh, but there's some on eBay, and, oh, there's some at Walmart. Or, you know, and Bowman, same idea. Bowman was, at Walmart and Target 3 or 4 days early. There's no kind of hype for the release as there is for this gaming stuff. There's a big kind of hype for release day, and all the stores have these these parties, or you know, some stores have these parties that have tournaments, all these kind of things that are really interesting, and it just keeps people involved in the hobby, and it keeps them engaged, and it keeps them wanting to keep coming back to that next set and spending money. And you just don't see that in the sports category. You just think, oh, well, it has Andrew Luck autograph. They're going to buy it because, oh, wait till it gets on eBay, and we'll tweet about how this card sold for $5,000 and blah, 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 and everybody's going to go rush and buy it. It's like, not really. Not really.
No.
You gotta get some excitement and create some unique things. All these sets are basically the same. They just have different window dressing on it, and they cost a different amount, you know. And the checklist for this stuff is essentially the same. Tribute and museum collection, you could look at the checklist. I mean, museum collection has a lot more memorabilia pieces, obviously. But aside from the autographs and stuff, it's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. It's just different window dressing. And there's enough demand out there to keep this going, you know, for these cards. And obviously some of these autographs has value. But I would love a Buster Posey autograph card. I would pay quite a bit for one. I don't know what they're worth, but personally, I would pay $40-$50 for one right now, and they're probably worth more than that. It doesn't have to be a rookie card. It could be a Buster Posey autograph Topps card. As long as I know he signed it, I'll pay probably $30-$40 for that right now.
Absolutely.
So I just wish there was a little more excitement and behind these products, and they took maybe a little more time on them, had a little more unique things, try to create some value outside of just, oh, I opened it, now I've got all these cards here, and maybe I can sell them on eBay or whatever, and I'm done.
Yeah.
Maybe some code, a game, an area where you can trade these cards on Topps.com or something, or, you know, just different ways to just connect these people. Instead of relying on everybody to do it yourself, you know, forums to do it yourself. They have no appreciation for anything, it seems like. You know, it's a
thought
we make
a product. There needs to be a new idea. Somebody's going to come up with it. We need to find something new and fresh for this hobby. There needs to be something that's going to change the game, that's going to freshen up. I mean, you know, we've all seen the different designs. They're all rehashed every year. Black pen, silver pen, gold pen, acetate. They're all rehashed. Let's find something that's going to be a game changer. That's what we need.
And they use designs from the, you know, the 86 tops or whatever, you know, Cordell Patterson signing cards that are 86 tops. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. Cards look okay. But it's the same thing. Johnny Manziel will be doing the same thing next year. He'll be signing tall boys and signing rookie premier cards and ink and blink and, you know, that's it. You know?
Yep.
I really don't see anything changing. I don't see enough people putting pressure on them to change. They don't change their customer service, even with some hate, you know, Facebook hate, Twitter hate. I'll hate on them. You know, guys will just quit the company. They'll just quit. I'm done with this. God, I'm catching too much heat from these guys. I'm out of here. So
exactly.
I'm going to get another job.
About. Yep, yep. So, I'm tired of dealing with all this negativity. Yep.
Yeah. So seeing some of the gaming stuff really opened my eyes. I was like, what? People are actually excited about these cards. You know, there's unique things, these release day events, which should be a huge thing in the sports thing. It could be huge.
They should bring, hey, even though it was gimmicky, they had that Topps Rip Party guy. Do something like that. Bring it back. It was gimmicky, but it was something, you know.
Maybe nothing is better than that, but.
seriously.
But try, you don't even, you guys could open cases. It could be a big deal. They could have a thing on their webpage saying, Mojo Break, Leighton Sports Card, you know, so-and-so. These are all the guys breaking these cases. They're exciting. You know, I'm saying go to their YouTube. Even if you're not buying into the product, go to their YouTube because they're going to be opening it, and you can see a whole case being opened right now, and they're going to hit something probably good. And check it out. You know, they could be a whole thing. And you guys could schedule them so that it's like, you know, you could watch Rich's case, and then you could jump right to Mojo's case. You know what I'm saying? You could kind of, you know, work together a little bit or get a time slot. Topps could promote you a little bit. That's just one thing that you do. And then the whole card store angle. There could be a whole slew of card stores that do release parties and open up at whatever time and do a box break or case break or whatever in their store. So
I agree.
You know, there's opportunities there.
Hey, maybe we need to. Maybe I'll call one of these guys and say, let's get you guys some more media. You know, seriously.
I think they're scared of the media. I think they're scared of Beckett writing a bad story about him. They're scared of me blowing them up on Twitter a little bit. They're scared of, you know, something like that happening. Do we have any more time? Because the one thing they did change was the card numbering. Somebody even brought this up to me. They're like, hey, did you know they changed the card numbering on top, back? And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I guess they number the good players number one, and then number 100 is a good player. And then some baseball blogger, some girl baseball blogger, blows them up, and, you know, and she's not even really connected to the sports car world, but she blows them up in some kind of MLB blog, and sure enough, Top listens to that and changes that because they got blown up on some kind of quote-unquote mainstream kind of situation, which is just disgusting to me. It's like, who cares? I didn't hear one thing about somebody, anybody complaining about stupid card numbers on the back. Maybe some old-timer that's just like, wow, you know they, every set's got to be like the 1985 set or whatever.
Oh, you mean they did away with numbering the cards on the back or something?
So like Bryce Harper would be, you know, Bryce Harper would be like card number 100, or Buster Posey would be like number 150. You know what I'm saying? They would, the kind of the key numbers in the set, and it's that we're talking about Top Series 1, it would be, you know, the key players. And the card number, you know, 68 is going to be some Joe Blow, you know what I mean? But card number 75 might be somebody kind of good. You see what I'm saying? See, I didn't even know. I wasn't even aware. But they changed that. Girl blows them up on her blog, and Topps changes it back. I think they even released, like, some kind of statement or saying that, oh, we're going to change it back. So it's just stupid. The things they pay attention to are just stupid. They're more, you know, they ancillary. They mean nothing when they really should be honing in on people who actually are.
I'm noticing that. I'm looking through archives. I have a bunch of base here. And Jim Kelly, number 10. Darius Hayward, day 141, right? So I'm going through them. Terry Bradshaw, 180. So it's like an even number. Brett Favre, 130. Joe Montana, 50. CJ Spiller, 172 because he's irrelevant. Dez Bryant, number 6. Sidney Rice, 93. Going through, that's Aaron Rodgers, 175. So it's either a 0 or a 5 on these guys. Drew Brees, 30. That's interesting. I didn't notice that. That's some good tidbit of info there. Not that it doesn't matter.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. That's what I got told. Somebody told me this. I was like, who cares? Like, it's stupid. They change that, but they don't deal with their customer service, or they don't hype their products enough, and they don't, you know, help out breakers or dealers or hobby shop owners. You know what I'm saying? They're so busy stroking off these distributors 24/7 and worrying about what some blogger is writing about on MLB.com. So I guess
I was going to say, we have 2 minutes before we go, but I wanted to say, I don't know if it was you that tweeted it. It might have been you or somebody about the rookie premiere, that the distributors were there, but the people that should be there are local card store owners and breakers.
Yeah, I was like, wow, all these distributors. I'm like walking around. I'm like, the only people I'm seeing are NFL players, people that work for the Top Opinion distributors. Like, these guys that I see at the summit, and then we're at the GTS thing. I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing here? I know exactly why they're there, because they're the Top Real customer. Tops didn't give a shit about, somebody like me or something, you know, who buys, you know, a few hundred dollars worth of product every year. They don't give a shit about me. They give a shit about GTS and in their pockets.
And GTS, you know, I've been buying them for years, and they never said anything about rookie premiere to me. Like, oh, I was at the rookie premiere, and I seen Cam Newton. He looked good. You know, they don't relay this to any of their customers. They're just there to hang out, I guess.
It's a free trip for them. It's a comp thing, which is disgusting. There should be at least a couple collectors there, fans, or somebody.
Right.
I mean, you know. So they don't want those people there. They only want the people that are being tops. Only want people that are blowing them. Which I understand, but
Well, shoot, we're running out of time, so we'll talk about this more next week. But check out sportscardradio.com. We got some breaks coming up tomorrow. A couple randoms. We got a museum collection baseball you can get in if you're listening to this in time. The preferred momentum, and then the Valor case. next week. We're going to have some score football, and we're pre-selling Prestige. But make sure, you know, Ryan's got up on sportscardradio.com. He's got all the checklist stuff, so pick which team you want. And other than that, we got to click the outro real quick because we ran this one a little thin. But thanks again, Ryan. Always a pleasure, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.